It's JFM's Championship Sunday.
Ultimately, we're just trying to add a little bit to the legacy probably of the Dublin teams of the 70s who created all this, and we do stand on their shoulders.
No matter what we've gone on to do, I'm Jack Healy's son.
Win an All-Ireland, be it the Hoover, the Wheelbarrow, whatever system you want to call it.
Today FM's Championship Sunday with Boyle Sports. Time to play.
Today FM.
How's it going? Good morning. Welcome to Championship Sunday with Boyle Sports. I'm Nathan Murphy. So, for the first time in a quarter of a century, the Leinster Hurling Final needs a replay to see who will lift the Bob O'Keefe Cup. We're going to look ahead to Galway against Kilkenny, part two on this morning's show. And the Super 8s are starting to take shape. Just one more spot remains after wins yesterday for Roscommon, Tyrone and Kildare. As always, we want your thoughts on the season so far. Just what is going on with the Cork footballers and how do you think today's replay will go? 087 4100 102 is the number for texts and for all your WhatsApp messages. As always, two great guests with us in studio bright and early this morning. Our first guest is a man who's enjoyed great success as both a player and as a coach. He was a key part of the great Galway team that won back-to-back All-Ireland hurling titles in 87 and 88. Well, his move into coaching has seen him help St. Bridget's of Roscommon and Gary Castle of Westmeath to provincial football titles before he returned to the small ball, guiding Galway to the All-Ireland Under-21 title in 2011. He then took on the role of senior manager of the Galway Hurlers, beating Kilkenny in the Leinster final of 2012. But he just couldn't get that final one over Brian Cody in the finals of 2012 and 2015. Welcome to Championship Sunday, Anthony Cunningham.
Hello, Nathan.
So you've spent the year back at it, working with Pat Gilroy and the Dublin Hurlers. Early exit, but good signs of progress.
Yeah, I suppose it was difficult coming in there. Really, there was a lot of work to be done. But still, really, really positive from the players and some great performances. The three matches have been ahead of injury time and not getting a result was disappointing at the finish. But we'd be really buoyed by the progress and really looking forward to next year already.
Does that leave it harder to just park the season when there's a lot of what might have beens?
Oh, it was. I suppose I saw Wexford playing yesterday evening against Westmeath and it was hard, really. That's a game I could have won and probably should have won down Wexford Park. And you'd been playing, quarter final next Sunday. But it's the target for next year and, we'd be hoping, maybe get a couple of more players back and, that guys would know the system now. Still you'd be also looking forward to an under-21 team there and there's a huge amount of development now, particularly strength and conditioning to get ready for the championship because there's no small players out there now playing. that's going to happen as well and we'd really be looking forward to it.
After the 4 years in the cauldron of being the senior inter-county manager, particularly with Galway reaching All-Ireland finals and just not being able to get over the finish line and the pressure and the intensity that comes with being an inter-county manager of one of the top teams, is it nice to be just slightly to the side of that and Pat Gilroy being the one who has to go out and face the media after every game?
The media aren't the worst really now. you could get worse. You could get an irate supporter behind the stand afterwards. It's very good. You get to do more coaching actually and more work on the field, which is really what you love. Really, that's what I like really,
It's so, the coaching side of things you prefer to focus on.
It's great, yeah. It's great to be on the fields and working with the players really and to see improvement. And Pat is a really good backroom team. So very organised. Same conditions now as the footballers. Can't be no excuses really.
There was a brilliant atmosphere that first day at Parnell Park for the game against Kilkenny. Are you a fan of this new round robin series in Leinster and Munster?
Yeah, absolutely. And just talking off air there to Bernard, saying it's now going to happen in the footballers in the next 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Two matches running in the Super 8s, and that was brilliant, really. And I think we had two matches and a break, and then two matches, and that's really I think the best. And I think they'll probably take a mini break next year, but home advantage. Probably disappointed with maybe a refereeing decision towards the finish, but that happens as well in close championship matches. We probably didn't get the rub of the green in that area as well, but that happens. And
it's 2 months on and it still rankles.
It does, yeah. I'm not here to bash referees. I think the game has moved on drastically, but I don't think the GAA and I don't think they're putting enough into training the referees and coaching the referees genuinely. And I think they're, you know, they're, you watch the World Cup and they now have, you know, the video, the VAR, and it's really, you know, a selling point really of the World Cup, how they can, for a minute or two, they can have a quick look. That technology is there today. All the referees are wired. All the matches are now televised, and I can't see why they don't use it a bit more.
So it's technology you'll be looking for rather than what is obvious, often seen as the quick fix, which is having two referees.
Two referees. Then the two referees might slow down and then you have one playing off in another. And I don't think you see it in sport. You don't see it in soccer. You don't see it in rugby. But I do think they can. And I do. I think in the big matches now they're getting calls from Hawkeye, from the guy in the stand. Yeah. That happens for sure.
We might get back into it later in the show. Our second guest was also winning back-to-back All-Ireland titles 30 years ago, a key part of Sean Boylan's brilliant Meath side. He also won 5 Leinster titles, forming part of a fearsome full forward line alongside Colm O'Rourke and Brian Stafford. A 2-time All-Star as well. Great to have you with us, Bernard Flynn.
Cheers, Nathan. How are you doing?
Your old boss, Sean Boylan, was in with us a couple of weeks ago in fine fettle, as ever. He was saying you're pretty good at meeting up and reminiscing and marking these anniversaries.
Well, actually, we're up in Dublin next Friday, that team.
Oh, yeah?
30 years, yeah. We're staying in the Crow Park Hotel.
Where should we be avoiding next Friday night?
Well, Lyons and Harnfield and probably Cassidy's. I think Fran Ryder's going to do something for us, but we're all getting together. It's first time it's men only, so it'd be interesting to see those boys in the town in Dublin and cut them loose for a while. So myself and Beggy are organising, but Sean is... He's been brilliant now. I was just shocked that you kept the show to an hour when you're Sean Boylan on.
We could easily have extended another hour. It must be brilliant, though, to have such an iconic manager and still to get spend time with him and to be able to reminisce and to talk about the glory days.
Someone was just asking me last night about him, but words nearly can't describe it. An incredible man now. Jeez, I mean, we had our ups and downs, but an amazing manager, and... Even when you were young at that time, you didn't realise that some of the stuff he was doing for you, the way he was looking after you.
What sort of stuff? His person.
I'll tell you a couple of things. He was amazing at getting to know everybody's family. I remember I was young and a couple of us were probably a bit younger, and Beggy, myself, Amali, a few fellas like that would maybe, he'd have to watch us a little bit more than the others a little bit. But I remember coming home a few times, he was there in my house, sitting with my mum and dad, checking things out and how things were and blah, blah, blah. So... He after matches, all the mothers and fathers and wives, girlfriends, he was big into all of that sort of stuff. So he knew everybody inside out and who was belonged to them, sisters, brothers. But what a man. I mean, genuinely an amazing man manager.
I'm not sure what exactly the age gap is between the two of you, but is it true that he once man-marked you in a match?
Yeah, I was telling Shane Stapleton this story there a few weeks ago. This is actually incredible. We're playing a junior semi-final. My club was St. Colum Kills, Robbie and Man and myself, 1983. The Dubs just won the All-Ireland and Navan was jammed. There must have been 20,000, whatever it was, jammed in. But we were playing before the semi-final. He's the manager. He's marking me in the second half of the junior semi-final. So he finishes, he goes off with about 10 minutes to go. He shook my hand and he rubbed me on the head and he says, "You have a great future, but I have a job to do and get the team ready." So he's playing in the junior semi-final. He was 41 or 2. I was only a young lad.
Wow.
And... getting the team ready. That was Boylan. He was incredible. Incredible.
I'd say he'll still be trying to keep an eye on you next Friday night when you're rampaging around Dublin.
No, when the drinking started, the one thing he did do, when the drinking started, he just ran a mile because he knew that maybe the fellas would run amok. So he was great.
He didn't want to know.
No, downtown.
He wasn't
downtown.
Alex Ferguson turning up at the parties.
Oh, no, he just used to, I tell you, he put manners in you, but he'd let you have your downtime was downtime with him.
That sort of success seems a long, long time ago now for Meath football. What's going on?
Yeah, it's funny, just looking at Cork's result last night and Meath. Well, we actually probably should have bet Tyrone this year, but overall the last number of years has been disappointing since 2010, the Leinster final we won but didn't win probably against Louth. And just hasn't happened. I think at underage we've neglected it massively, massively now. We've a brilliant minor team at the moment, brilliant. Good under 20 side. See what will happen. Will they be developed, brought through? How will they be sort of brought together? But it's tough, and I know the lads involved, Andy McIndy, Jerry McIndy, Finney and Murta, all good friends, and they're trying hard, but it just hasn't happened. Mick O'Dowd the same, and we've fallen back. We've gone back a good bit, a lot, and Division 2, we finished third from the bottom. So it's not easy, it's not nice, and we've just seen the Dubs now for us. And you see the Dubs, they're doing what they're doing. It's, you know, it's hard, it's tough.
But it's a numbers game as well, and it was great to see the this year's under, you know, the under 17 for Meath, that they have a very good team.
Yeah, brilliant.
But they probably need 3 or 4 of those teams. They're on the 20 team, did very well. And it's just, they'll need to build on three or four teams coming together. But it's the population has grown again in Meath because of the influx of people leaving the city and moving out there. So it has to get stronger.
It does, but something strange, there's something different and strange has happened. Like, I mean, we've never had guys leaving panels. I think 13 gone since January this year. There's nine in America, nine of the team, I think, in America at the moment. That never really happened. And
what do you put that down to? Because quite often it's seen as maybe Dublin's dominance that, and it's hard to believe somebody could be on a Meath football team but have no real belief that they can even win a Leinster title. So what's there to play for?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, a lot of the players, they don't remember any success. A lot of them playing now, they don't know. So there's nothing to cling on to, if you like. Look at the young lads now, looking up to all the Dublin, the stars that they are and what they've achieved. I mean, what they've achieved is just quite incredible. The All-Irelands and the way they have it, and Gavin, the way he's managing them. Yeah, if we could just it's going to start the underage, that's it. It's we have... The supporters nearly fell out of love with football for the last few years. They're getting behind them again, but we just need something and we need a break. But the underage has been a disaster the way we've neglected it, and we're paying the price.
All right, it's time for this week's competition. With thanks to the GAA, we're giving away two tickets to a game next weekend in either the Super 8s or the Hurling Quarterfinals. So be in with a chance to win, answer this question now to 087-4100-102 on text or on WhatsApp. Just tell us the name of the current Donegal senior football manager. We will announce the winner later on in the hour. We'll talk more football anon, but right now we're going to focus on hurling. It is Kilkenny against Galway, part two, after last weekend's draw at Croke Park. They're going to make the trip to Tip this afternoon. It's a 3 o'clock throw-in at Semple Stadium for the first replay in a Leinster senior hurling final since 1993. Anthony, when you look back on last week's game, was it that Galway didn't perform, or have Kilkenny found a way to rattle them?
I think it's a bit of both, really. I think Galway would be disappointed, really, with their performance. They seemed to play really in third gear for quite a bit of the match and hope to win out in the finish. And it may just be the catalyst, or what another guy might say, the kick in the behind, really, that'll drive Galway on and maybe go on and win the All-Ireland. So it could be a blessing in disguise. Most definitely, there'll be a reaction today. A lot of their players probably didn't play up to the level, and whether they're mentally tired or were going through the motions, really just another match for them. You know, they probably didn't, you know, focus in as much as Micheál Donohue would have wanted. But having said that, they still, Kilkenny had to draw the match to get there in the finish. Galway will probably feel that, you know, with another 10 or 20% increase in their performance, and you would expect strongly they'll get that today, that they'll go on and win it.
This time last week, we had Tommy Walsh in studio and we were talking about David Burke's comments that Kilkenny now fear Galway rather than the opposite way around. And maybe they meant nothing, and maybe they mean nothing. And Tommy was wondering if potentially it meant there might be a tiny bit of complacency creeping in to Galway. When you look at even the way David Burke performed last week, do you think those comments were ill-timed and something they'll probably regret?
I think knowing David, and I know him very well, he would really be a real hurling man and really be an honest guy. And I think if you looked at the whole interview in the context, he was explaining that back in 2012, and going back that far, Galway always feared playing Kilkenny, even in big matches. Maybe back in the 80s, we didn't fear them because we'd sort of beaten them quite a bit in league and many different matches, championship in 86 and the semi-final. So that fear wasn't there, I think, back in the 80s. And maybe then the 90s and 2000s, when the super team came along, you know, that fear was instilled. Kilkenny were unbeatable. And Galway still had that fear going in, say, in 2012. And he was making the point that in 2012, I think it turned around a bit, that the fact that we'd got one over and had won well and really had a huge performance in 2012. So in Leinster, I think the point he was trying to say that the pendulum had swung the other way. And in the last couple of years in particular. So I think that's where he was coming from.
The 2012 game, you were obviously in charge. It was right at the start, and you get this huge win over Kilkenny. So even though Kilkenny then went on ultimately and won the All-Ireland final that year and beat you again in 2015, there was a different attitude, you feel, in the Galway side. You were just beaten by a better team on the day, but it certainly wasn't because there was a fear that Kilkenny were far ahead of Galway.
Yeah, and then proved back that up in some big matches against them. 2015 drawn matches, even in a Leinster final subsequently, you know, wasn't the whole pile in it. So definitely Galway, I mean, Look, in hurling, a huge amount goes down to confidence. And Galway, I think that was the point that David was making as well, that, you know, teams are very close, but the team that has that bit more confidence or the team that has a slight doubt is, we've played these Kilkenny guys before and they've beaten us so many times. So I think Galway have that swagger, and it's how to use that properly. For sure, Galway mightn't have been tested fully to the limits of the previous year. So most definitely that will be, I think Galway will use that definitely this week, whereas Kilkenny probably used it a bit last week, and no doubt that was mentioned in the dressing room, and that would be Kilkenny wouldn't like that really, because they were saying, well, who are they to challenge us? But we shall see this afternoon. But I would expect that Galway, you know, their top players in Conor Cooney, Conor Whelan, Joe Canning, David Burke will have to increase their own performances. I'm damn sure they will.
First time we've seen in a while probably that Gerard McInerney wasn't able to pretty much do what he wants in that game, that Kilkenny seemed to target him. They managed to get TJ Reid right into the game. I guess that's where the lessons can be learned quite quickly from Galway's point of view. And what does Brian Cody do to come up with something else? Because presumably you can't just repeat the trick.
Yeah, I think you're fully spot on there. I think they'll target McInerney again at centre-back. They ran at him quite a bit. He didn't dominate as he did last year, but he has it within him to really power into that match today. I suppose the one worry would be, from a Galway point of view, if Daithí Burke doesn't have a good game and really kept everything together. He's a super, super fullback. He was just in the thick of everything, and his challenges last weekend and his tackling were, you know, you could not fault a screed that Daithí did, and they were instrumental in keeping Galway in the game. If he didn't have a good match and he's off colour, Galway would be worried, that's for sure. So it'll be interesting to see what Kilkenny will do with Daithí today. I think they'll try and take him out of the fullback position. I think late on Kilkenny withdrew quite a good few of their forwards and got to score some distance and had exposed John Hanbury and as you said previously, Garrod. But yeah, that'll be very, very interesting. But I still think that Galway more in the locker.
Galway, it felt as though they were in cruise control through the summer. I guess, Bernard, the challenge of going back-to-back in All-Ireland titles, it's a mental challenge as much as anything else. And Anthony touched on the word swagger. You want that. You want to take the confidence of being the All-Ireland champions. But you then need to match that with the work rate, the intensity that got you there in the first place. And that seems to be a very difficult challenge for an awful lot of teams.
Yeah, I watched it closely last week and was just, you know, just looking at it. I know Mick Dempsey, we were a great pal of mine now, very, very close. And just to see, it was a different type of game, Anthony. There was a lot of mistakes. I mean, there was a lot of aimless pucking. The defenders were on top. And I just wonder, will Kilkenny be able to sort of hold the Galway forwards? They looked a bit sluggish. Weren't as sharp as they normally were. But they might have got, Kilkenny could have got confidence last weekend that they really wanted and needed. And if the likes of, Richie Hogan could have an impact. I mean, Walter Walsh, I expect an awful lot more from him. Fenley coming in there. If Galway could, Kilkenny could be dangerous. If the defence holds up, I mean, Killian at centre-back and Walsh at full-back were just immense. And some of the defender was outstanding from a football point of view. To see some of the tackling Daithí Burke, but defenders all around were on top, I thought. Different type of game it was. The catching was incredible. But there was a lot of mistakes in that game. I thought for a hurling match, there was a lot of basic errors. And I'm just looking forward to today. I think it'll be a different type of game. But if they can, I think Galway will have to cut loose, particularly the forwards. They could explode, like the size of them. They can win their own ball. Whelan, now I expect a big game from inside. And Cooney, I mean, if he gets going. But so it's going to be interesting. But I think Galway will win by 4 or 5 points today.
There's no doubt that the script has been flipped between Galway and Kilkenny. Because ordinarily, if Kilkenny were going into a replay, they'd have started the first game as favourites. The opposition would have figured something out, stopped them for one day. And then Cody works his magic over the next week, looked back in the tape, figures it all out, and a different Kilkenny emerge. It was the opposite last weekend. Kilkenny were the underdogs. Whatever they tried, it worked. How does Cody change things then that they can get to another level if Galway get to another level?
Yeah, I think they'll target Daithí Burke and have someone different. They won't probably play Walter Walsh there, as Bernard has said. They'll probably push Walter out the field and look for a bigger performance again from him. I think there's more in him. If you were the Kilkenny guy and Cody this week, we'll tell him straight to his face, there's more in you. You've got to deliver. Gerry Aylward, as an inside forward who was really top-class forward 3 years ago, had a very serious injury. He still got a lot of possession, but as Bernard said, I think on both sides they didn't take right options. I think Galway tried that as well. Joe Canning, a pass for a goal. Conor Whelan, maybe over-ambitious at times. But they will, either side today, if there's half a chance, will go for goal. That's for sure. So Kilkenny, at the very start, will push on for goals. And if they get up today, if they go 3, 4, 5 points up, they will want to do that to really test the goalie mental strength and test their defence.
There were two other games in the championship last night in the preliminary quarterfinals. Limerick 5-22 to 13 point winners over Carlow at Netwatch Cullen Park, and at Cusick Park, Wexford saw off Westmeath by 2-21 to 16 points. Are these worthwhile games, Anthony?
I was at the Westmeath Wexford game last night. Obviously, because I live and have connections in Westmeath, we'd follow them, really. Disappointing in one sense, probably, with their performance. I think with Michael Ryan, and he's stepped down after the match. Yeah, and he has had a great tenure there. I think they probably played better hurling last year and the year before. Went back slightly this year. But having said that, you wouldn't be over impressed with Wexford. You know whether they tried too hard or not, but they just are probably not scoring enough in a match like that to go in next weekend to threaten Clare. Mm. Obviously, it's a big match for Clare Wexford, but they probably would say, listen, we didn't get a whole pile from it, and they were going through the motions to some degree, but they weren't as sharp as you'd want them to be a week out from a match. Did they serve a purpose? I think the hurling, you know, it's a very big step up for both Carlow and Westmeath, really take on the might of Limerick and Wexford, who play at a higher tempo, and it's going to take time. But all in all, it's good reward for Joe McDonagh Cup winners, yeah. But I think, you know, really, really big stretch.
A text in: I think the heat and the hot day was a factor in Croke Park last Sunday, with the low scoring game and the players' performance suffered as a result. How will the Galway players perform today, as it's expected to be another hot day? More water will need to be provided to the players. You never came up with that, with all these reasons that Galway didn't perform.
I think it's
not fully hydrated. Yeah, get the basics right.
I think with the levels are, you know, teams prepare now, I think that would definitely be on the correct side.
It was fairly hot in the Munster hurling final as well, and it didn't seem to be a factor.
Players are well used of hydrating and getting right, and
it's just yesterday was incredible. The heat. I was down there.
The heat off the stands as well, and the ground. Yeah, off the ground.
Did you make sure you were hydrated?
I did, yeah. Not that hydrated this morning. I could have done
get the spring water.
Water going in yesterday. I was watching it doing the commentary, and just bottles left, right, and centre. It was incredible. Some heat to play in.
All right, yeah. Let's switch our attention to football then, because we're going to talk about the qualifiers in a couple of moments' time, but we're heading quickly towards the Super 8s. And last week, our producer Shane Stapleton went to the launch of Now TV, the only TV streaming service to show the biggest sporting moments on 10 Sky Sports channels, including this year's GAA Championship. 2012 All-Ireland winning manager Jim McGuinness was on hand to tell Shane about his journey as a football coach, his thoughts on the World Cup, his philosophy on the beautiful game, and how to stop Jim Gavin.
Jim, so you spent 5 years with Celtic. You spent, I suppose, a little under a year in the Chinese Super League with Roger Smith. Where is your career at the moment with football?
Hopefully in a good place. I came back from Beijing, finished up my A license, and since then I've sort of been on my travels a wee bit. I was in New York there for the last couple of weeks, out with the New York Red Bulls on a club visit. I think the way I've been looking at it is just, you know, I'm only going to do this once in terms of transitioning and doing your apprenticeship. And so I've been trying to speak to as many people as I can before I make a move into management, if you like. And sort of I've been working really hard on my own philosophy and sort of what's involved in that, how I see the game and how that could possibly be trained. And so I've really enjoyed the badges with the FAI. They've given me a different dynamic. My experiences in Celtic have been indoctrined, if you like, into the Celtic way in terms of possession football, and then obviously almost the opposite of that in China, where we didn't even want possession. It was more about in behind, getting at teams, pressing very aggressively up on the press and stuff. And so all these experiences hopefully will help me. And so I just feel now that for the first time, I suppose since 2012, you know, in 2014 since I stepped down, from Donegal that I'd like to, maybe to take a team again and just get back on the pitch and start coaching and try to bring all these things that I've been working on for a number of years through observation then into my own thoughts, try and bring that now out onto the pitch and start working with players again.
So are there opportunities there that you'd be interested in, or is it a case of biding your time until the right thing comes along?
There's a few possibilities at the moment, yeah, and I suppose the window's just opening now as well. So, yeah, there is a few options, a few possibilities that are knocking about at the moment, and so it's just about the right one. It's about the right one for me, where I'm at in my development, the opportunity again to be in control, to coach, and to be tested as well at a level that you'd be tested. And then obviously your family comes into that and where it is geographically and stuff. And so there's a lot of things to consider, but the bottom line is I'm getting to the stage now where I feel as if this is where I want to go again and that I feel as if I'm ready, sort of. So it's getting to that point.
So we're in the middle of the World Cup at the moment. Is there anything, like, you probably view it differently than you probably would have with previous World Cups, because now you're a manager, you've got to analyse it. How do you view this World Cup, and has anything really stood out to you as very interesting from managers' tactics or whatever it might be?
That's a very good question, and it's not a question I've been asked before, but it's always something that's rattling around in my head, and that is, you know, when you're growing up and you're watching football, it's this beautiful, fantastic, free-flowing thing. Oh my God, what a brilliant game. You know, when you become a coach, you keep drilling down into the detail, and so the game becomes something completely differently. And if you've got a guy in the stand and they just go to the game every Sunday and that's it, and they're not coaching, so they see the game totally different to a coach. And so when you're watching even the World Cup now, you can't even enjoy the World Cup the way you used to enjoy the World Cup. You know, you know what are they doing, how are they setting up, you know, what are they doing, how they respond to that, you know, and so on and so forth, and the time in the game and I talk to football coaches and they say that they wouldn't go to the pub now to watch a game with their mates on a Monday night, and they would say, oh, why would you not go and watch the game? Because they just want to break away from football sometimes, because if they went to the game, they wouldn't enjoy the game. They'd be analysing the game on the TV, and I understand, I get that, you know. So it's very true. When you're in coaching, you see the game differently, and I suppose that's what's fascinating about it, and probably the most enjoyable part about it as well. But it just means that you don't get a break from it.
And are there any teams whose tactical setups, or are there any particular players that really excite you when you're now looking at it through this prism?
I think obviously in terms of my own development, there's been an evolution in terms of. You know, I've studied a lot of managers very closely. I've studied a lot of team philosophies very closely. I've been part of a culture in Celtic. You know, been part of a culture in Beijing. And so all those things add up to how you perceive the game and how you see the game. And you've got then to sort of decipher what you believe in and where your values are. And then you've got to sort of put that down and say that this is how I see the game. And then obviously that leads you to, well, how do you go about developing that, and how you go about training that? What's the implications of that? So if I go with this system, what is the opposition going to do? What's their game plan to counteract that? And then have you got a plan for that? And that's when it becomes sort of, it's almost like a due diligence on your own game plan type thing. And so I think for me, these are things that I've been trying to work on and develop over the last number of years.
If someone was to say to you, what is Jim McGuinness's philosophy on football, soccer, whatever way you want to put it, how best would you put it, or who would you liken it to?
I think, obviously, you know, possession, based on my time with Celtic, possession will always be important. But I do like the other dynamic aspect of it. I do like, you know, I'd like it to be aggressive, intensive. A lot of the principles that we had in Donegal, only the bottom end of the pitch, and so it depends where you want to set that line. It depends if you want to take the opposition on, it depends if you want to press high. But I'd like it to be sort of dynamic and exciting, intensive, but underpinned by a lot of composure when you're forced to play with composure. And teams, all teams now, whether soccer or Gaelic, want to play on the transition. That's where scores come from, that's where goals come from. But a lot of teams don't allow you to do that, and so you have to have a very coherent plan then for, okay, they've stopped us on that avenue. Now how have we got the brains and have we got the tactical nous to break them down? And that's a big part of both games. And so you can't just say you're one type of coach. You know, you want to play out from the back, that's fine. We're going to push four people up and stop you from doing that. This is the whole trend in Gaelic football now. We're going to push nine players into the opposition's half, stop you going short. So how are you going to deal with that? So the game's always evolving, and you can't just say, you know, definitively this is who I am. You've got to be flexible, and you've got to be thinking all the time about the questions that you're asking off the opposition and the impact that they have on you.
Something that kind of sticks out to me is that a lot of sports can, you know, elements can be taken from one sport and put into another, and we see the influence of basketball coaches in Gaelic football. And you think about Pep Guardiola and the fact that he would have used Manuel Neuer as a bit of a sweeper keeper and Ederson as a playmaker also. When you look at Graham Brodie for Laois, and he's running 60 yards up on the field on the shoulder of players, do you see that as a new tactical development in Gaelic football, and how far can that go?
Well, it depends on the goalkeepers, because obviously you probably need an outfield player that's really, really comfortable in the ball to be able to do that. But I thought it was interesting from the point of view of obviously just what we've been speaking about. Teams are pushing more and more bodies up the field, and the reason for that is they want to go man-to-man. And if you're man-to-man, then, you know, it is literally that. And so there's an opportunity to get pressure on the ball. But if the goalkeeper's coming out and he's leaving the goals, like he did on Sunday, and he's becoming that plus one coming from the back, then that creates a different dynamic. And theoretically, if you don't take the ball into contact, you shouldn't lose the ball. But then that's theoretically, you know, there's a gap there, and I'm going to go through two guys there, and then you get turned over, then the consequences could be grave. But I think the point in this is it's lateral thinking. They're going in against the big guns. They're bringing so much to the table. What can we do off script, you know, that might catch them on the hop, that would sort of facilitate us getting some type of an advantage, some type of an edge? And I thought that's what was interesting about the tactic on Sunday.
And just one final question. You're the last man to lead a team to beat Dublin in Championship. It's Jim Gavin's only defeat. If you were to identify how you would go about taking down this particular Dublin team, I don't know, have you even had enough of a chance to analyse them based on being with football, but how would you try to do it?
I would have my ideas, I think, in my head, but I think we would need a longer conversation than we have now. You know that you're talking hours to get to the bottom of that, because every single facet of their play, they're asking questions of you, and so you have to have a plan for that, and not only a plan for that, but also a plan to benefit from what they're doing, to put scores on the board at the other end. Because the reality is, if you want to beat Dublin, it doesn't matter who you are. If you want to beat Dublin, it's going to need to be 116, 117, 118 minimum to beat them. So it's okay saying we've got a defensive plan, you also need an offensive plan, and that's where the conversation becomes elongated.
Jim McGuinness there talking to Shane Stapleton earlier this week, making the point that you need to be flexible in Gaelic football management at this stage. It feels as though, watching quite a lot of teams, Bernard, that they've looked at Jim McGuinness's model and they've taken it as right, and they're not that flexible actually. It's just an all-out defence. There's no great transition.
I hope to God we never see it again, personally. I think they won All Ireland. What he achieved to win the All Ireland was incredible, with a bunch of players. And just listen to him, he's an incredibly driven guy. And just from someone who has a family and kids, and Jim has a good few kids and a family, to do what he's doing and believe in what he believes in, to see where he wants to go himself, is an extraordinary, ambitious, it's incredible. I hope he gets the break. I think he's going to need a break to manage. Like, if you're a Gaelic football manager, to get in and get a big job, unless you get a break, it doesn't really happen. And, you know, Division 3 and 4 in England or stuff like that, or Division 1 in Scotland, it's not all it's made out to be either. So I don't know where he's going to end up. He's won the All-Ireland with Donegal, and his ambition and his dedication, commitment to what he wants to pursue is just incredible. But I don't know where he's going to finish up.
You don't get a 3 or 4 year term generally if you're managing in the lower leagues in England.
But I just don't see where he's going to actually walk in and get a good job. I mean, like, you see some of the guys that can't even get a job. That is it going to be Division 3, Division 4, or, as we know, Division 2 and 3, or Division 1? And when he was over abroad and had a good contract with a good setup, and he left it. So I just don't know where the end game is going to be, but I'm fascinated.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because there's no doubt that Jim McGuinness is going to take a few risks, he's going to take a few chances, and he's going to work his backside off to get whatever job is going and whatever way he can progress in football. You do a bit of coaching between hurling and football. There's obviously a lot of similarities you can just take from coaching and philosophy that you can bring to any sport.
It's huge. I think hurling has got you know, there's a huge emphasis now in hurling on tackle and tackle counts and working and facing up players and stopping players. Some teams do withdraw and play 6-7 defenders now, or withdraw. Kilkenny have done it for years, maybe unnoticed, that they'll withdraw their two wing forwards and play very deep. So you do look at other sports, and definitely that what has happened previously in the football side, there are aspects of it taken into hurling. But on your point, I think now a lot of teams have looked at it defensively. Some have maybe gone too much, but you do have to be able to attack, and you have to have three in the full back line that can score now from 30, 35 metres out. And Dublin have that in abundance. But when they attack, they attack. And they set up very defensively, but their offensive side, is that's what Jim said in his recording there, that you do have to be able to get through and make goals and make scoring chances. And I think that's where Dublin have the edge still, that their transition and their speed of attack in particular. I think we saw that in the kind of final goal we played Roscommon, huge in numbers back, but I think their ambition when they broke was far too slow.
Bernard, text in: next Sunday, the Galway-Kerry match clashing with the World Cup final. Should the GAA be avoiding a clash, or will attendances in these matches suffer as a result?
I don't think it will. Believe it or not, it's happened before, but it's a strange one, really, to clash with it. But
you have an England-France World Cup final?
Yeah, I actually was in Croke Park last night. We were watching the penalties, and it could have been England-Russia. Maybe as good it wasn't, but... Yeah, it's an interesting one. I don't think the people that want to go, I don't think it'll bother them that much, but it probably shouldn't be clashing. It's a bit crazy. I think it's a bit silly.
It would make a great evening in the capital if the matches were that bit earlier, and then when the match was over, you could enjoy maybe one or two quiet drinks and watch the World Cup. I think it's just
everyone
a pity.
Wants to see it. It's a spectacle. Yeah. Something else.
And it's every 4 years, and you know, particularly if England are in it, but no matter who's in it, the sporting fans want to watch sporting.
The GAA will get bashed for having it anyway. They get knocked in the one way.
It's just a pity they didn't go a couple of hours earlier.
Yeah.
Well, the Galway County Board have written a letter to FIFA asking for them to move the time of the World Cup final, which I don't think is going to be happening. So, we now know 7 of the 8 teams that will start out in the Super 8s at Croke Park next weekend. In yesterday's Round 4 qualifiers, Kildare backed up their Newbridge defeat of Mayo with a convincing 320 to 18 points win over Fermanagh in Navan. So, just 6 weeks after losing to Carlow in the Leinster Championship, Kildare and Keane O'Neill find themselves in the Super 8s.
Well, isn't it funny, you know, how fickle it can be when when things aren't going well, and you know you're a public enemy number one, and when things are going well, things change very quickly. But it's important for the players, because they're getting the respect that, you know, that they've earned and that they deserve, because they put in a performance that they know they can. And unfortunately, we haven't done that enough this year, to be honest. Every one of us were hurting after the after that performance in Tullamore that day. We were disappointed with ourselves, you know, for myself right down to every member of the backroom and playing squad. And we felt sorry for ourselves for the couple of days we had to, but we really just got back together and had a serious chat. You know, I know it sounds a bit basic, but we just really needed to find out what happened and why did we underperform the way we did and what do we need to do going forward. And it was all about just getting one win, because it had been quite a while since we had one. And once we got that, a little bit of confidence, a little bit of belief grew. And no more than losing becomes a habit, we were hoping winning could. And it certainly has for this bunch of players.
So Kildare going to the group with Kerry, Galway, and the winner of today's game between Laois and Monaghan. Galway facing the trip to Newbridge in that group. Bernard, this Kildare team, you were watching them yesterday. Are they a group just inspired by the Newbridge to Nowhere saga and playing above themselves, or are they a team finally just reaching their potential?
It's extraordinary what's after happening. He just touched on losing against Kildare. It was mind-blowing how poor they were that day. But I think he probably found himself as a manager the Monday evening at 6 o'clock. He went in the news. Since then, I think he's been a different person. Obviously, what were they doing for 12 months when you see what they're capable of? Just quickly on the performance against Fermanagh, like, they have a serious bunch of footballers. The talent, the strength, the power, the pace, 320, 21 points against Mayo. I thought the two games, they played some brilliant, brilliant football with some outstanding footballers. So last year against, they scored 117 against Dublin for 50, 60 minutes, pushed them all the way. In Leinster, without a doubt, they are the next best thing to Dublin. And so, but people who play against them can't believe the strength, the size of them, physique, and they have everything. But I think, you know, they needed a good shake-up, the players themselves, their attitude, and the management. And, like, for 12 months, it wasn't happening. And he was out that door, he was a dead man walking, and it's completely changed. And you know what? They could trouble they could have a decent run in this in the Super 8. So they've great momentum, confidence is back, and they've some very good forwards.
They'll now play either Leash or Monaghan at Croke Park in the opening round next weekend. They
it'll
meet
be,
today
be Monaghan.
at 2 Monaghan. O'clock. Anthony, you worked with the Leash footballers a year ago. Where are they?
Yeah, they're a really committed bunch. Have probably boxed above their weight this year. Probably will find physically the Monaghan test a bit beyond them. Mm. I'd hope to go well because I'm still in touch with a good few of them there. And really were disappointed, I think, against Dublin. They didn't get, you know, if you contrast the Leash Leinster final this year versus Kildare last year, Kildare really pushed Dublin for three quarters of the match. And, you know, they were, I'd say they believed their own hype for the past year and needed the jolt that they got against Carlow and got a break against the Newbridge saga and really delivered in it. I don't think that's the Leash wouldn't have the caliber of players that physically and I suppose athletes wise. But having said that, the Leash will go with a lot of confidence today. A very, very good manager in John Shukru, and they're well organised. But Monaghan are a different animal, really, really, really. I think could spring a surprise this year yet.
Well, we now know the other group has been fully completed. Roscommon and Tyrone joined Donegal and Dublin in that group. Roscommon 222-119 winners over Armagh. Two goals for Enda Smith, fabulous footballer.
Yeah, I was down at the match yesterday. He's super now, but it was a superb game of football. The first 40-50 minutes as good as I've seen this year. Some brilliant scores. And you have to commend, you know, McStay and McHale, the job they've did since the Galway match in the second half. They were terrible up front, very poor, didn't score from play for the last 50 minutes of the game. And to see them yesterday, I thought they were a different outfit going forward, and I really enjoyed it. They were super. McGeaney now, he was short a number of players. They were tired. You could see the last 10-15 minutes. Roscommon were brilliant, and the first half was probably one of the best 35 minutes I've seen for a long time.
Roscommon will now play Tyrone at Croke Park next weekend. Mickey Hart's men heaped further humiliation on Cork football, a 320-13 point win in Port Leash. That was a 16-point defeat for Cork, which follows a 17-point defeat to Kerry in the Munster final. I think we'll need a full show to go through what's going on in Cork football at the moment, but we're pretty much done for today. Anthony, who's going to win this Leinster final replay?
Galway are going to win it, and I hope in Galway are going to win it. I wouldn't like to be the loser, really, to have to face a really fresh Limerick team next weekend. So while nobody's thinking about that today, I wouldn't like to be thinking about that at 5 o'clock this evening if it was Brian Cody or Micheál Donohoe.
All right, great stuff, lads. Thanks a lot for joining us. Bernard Flynn and Anthony Cunningham joining us on Championship Sunday at our new start time of 8 a.m. We will talk to you again next Sunday. Up next is Alison Curtis. Good luck.
Today FM's Championship Sunday with Boyle Sports. For GAA betting with more markets than ever before, visit their app, Boyle Sports. Time to play. Today FM.